So often those chants are juxtaposed right before we meditate. The world is swept away. This body is filled with all sorts of unclean things, and then we say, may I be happy. It's to make you stop and think, where does true happiness lie? Where does a safe and secure happiness lie? This is the big question we have to ask ourselves, because everybody wants happiness. As the Buddha said, all things, all phenomena that you can experience are rooted in desire. What's the desire? The desire is the desire for happiness. The body, events in the mind, they all come from our desire for happiness. And then we act on that desire, sometimes in skillful and sometimes in unskillful ways. And so that's why the situation we're living in is a mixed bag in terms of being satisfactory or not. And so you have to look carefully at your actions to see which ones really are conducive to happiness and which ones are not. We can't believe rest secure in the notion there's somebody out there taking care of everything. And it's all going to turn out all right in the end. Because we're the ones who are shaping our experience. And if we're not careful, we're going to shape things in an unskillful way. The Buddha saw all our activities are aimed at happiness. And what was especially interesting, he saw how much of what we experience is an activity. Even our sense of self, who we are, that's an activity. It's a fabrication. We decide to identify with certain things. And the thought that I am, the thought of identification, is putting things together. It's a fabrication. It's an activity aimed at happiness. And to some extent, it's skillful. People who have a very poorly formed sense of self have trouble managing their lives. There's a certain level of identification that's needed, a certain sense of self that's needed just to function properly. And so in learning to be more skillful, the Buddha has us take that sense of self and try to make it more coherent. I was taking seriously your desire for true happiness, a happiness that lasts. And then asking yourself, well, what am I doing that's actually leading in that direction? What am I doing that's leading in the other direction? So maintaining that sense of what's in Pali called shame and fear of evil. In other words, shame at the idea of doing something that you know would be harmful. And then fear of the consequences of doing things that you know would be harmful. This type of fear, the Buddha said, is a useful kind of fear. This is what keeps us on the path. And it requires a certain sense of self, a certain sense of self-esteem, and the opposite of apathy. Realizing that what you do is important and it's going to have consequences down the line and you don't want to suffer the consequences of unskillfulness. This is what keeps you on path. The sense that there are dangers out there, and the dangers lie in your unskillful actions. But it also implies trust, the trust that you can do things the proper way, and your trust in the principle that your actions really do matter. And the quest for happiness is a good quest, if you do it properly. If you take your quest for happiness seriously, the Buddha says you actually end up developing qualities that might seem the opposite of, that are the opposite of selfishness. Because you realize that if your happiness depends on the suffering of other people, well, they want happiness too. They're not going to just sit around and allow you to maintain that happiness. It's going to get destroyed. So if you're really sincere about happiness, you also want to include, develop the quality of compassion, taking the happiness of other people into account. And if you're wise, you'll look for a happiness that is secure, rather than just simply what you can grab at any moment. So the sign of a wise person is realizing that sometimes the things you like to do are going to cause suffering, and the things you don't like to do are going to cause happiness. And it's a measure of your wisdom to realize that and act accordingly. In other words, our awareness of the whole causal principle really hits us because we realize it's going to affect our happiness. And that way we get wiser and wiser about causes and effects. And as he told his son Rahula, he'd really take paying careful attention to your actions and their results, and resolving not to repeat mistakes in terms of actions that cause suffering for yourself or for other people. He said, this is how people attain purity. So compassion, wisdom, and purity, the qualities we associate with the Buddha, come from taking your quest for happiness seriously. Good things come from this sense of self that wants to find a long-term happiness. Ultimately, as we all know, though, that the Buddha also teaches not-self. In other words, showing us that the things we tend to identify with can get in the way of an even higher level of happiness. But always keep in mind that it's that quest for happiness that lies in the background. That's the overriding issue. It's only when you become skillful in the way you manage your happiness in your life, realizing that being generous, being virtuous, training the mind are things that you have to do. You're responsible for your happiness. You have to develop these qualities that are harmless both to yourself and to others. Once you've got that principle firmly in mind, then you can start turning to the teaching on not-self. In which you see that the various things you identify with leave you open to all kinds of dangers. If you identify with things that are impermanent, things that can be changed by causal conditions that are outside of your control, you're putting yourself in a position of weakness. And this is where the teaching on not-self comes in. John Mahabua compares it to a stick that you use to hit the hand of a monkey that's reaching out for things it shouldn't reach for. Or for warning to yourself. If you reach into fire, it's going to be bad for you, so you have to slap your hand away from the fire. So many people resist the teaching on that self and all the teachings that are preparatory for that, like the chant we had just now on the body. It's there to remind you, if you really latch on to the body as yours in a really strong sense, you're going to suffer. If you can see it as a tool that you use towards happiness, okay, that's a different issue. But so many of us don't see it just in that way. It's us, it's ours. And of course, what happens to the body? It gets old, it gets sick in all sorts of horrible ways. And you don't have to wait until you're old, and it doesn't happen only to people who don't take care of their bodies. It happens to everybody. It can happen at any time. If you identify with it, you're leaving yourself open to all sorts of problems, to all sorts of dangers. And the same goes true for feelings, perceptions, thought constructs, consciousness. But he doesn't have you just drop and abandon these things. He has you turn them into the path. In other words, you take these things, you identify with them, you turn them into tools. Once there's tools, then it's possible to get a sense of distance from them, and also still to get use out of them. If we're meditating here, what are we focusing on? We're focusing on the body, focusing on the breath. We're learning to maximize the feelings of pleasure that come from the breath. Learn ways of perceiving the breath or energy in the body that create stronger and stronger states of concentration. Learn to direct our thoughts and evaluate the breath. That's fabrication. And to be aware of all this. So you've got all five aggregates here turned into a path. And there will be a sense of identification with the path, but it's somewhat different from just plain old straight identifying with these things. There's a more skillful use of them. So it leads to greater and greater sense of well-being, security. And as you get more identified with the path in this way, the other things outside that you should identify as you and yours, and if they change, there's going to be big trouble in your life. You can pull away from those attitudes because you have a better place to be. You try to focus all your desires around this and maintaining this sense of peace and well-being in the mind. So at some point when that sense of peace and well-being is really secure, then you can undercut those desires as well by seeing that even here in this stage of state of concentration, there's still impermanence, there's still stress. And in seeing that, you can let go entirely. And you see, it's possible for there to be a dimension where there is no sense of I am, no sense of identification. And yet it's not annihilation. That's just the opposite. The only thing that gets annihilated there is stress and suffering. That's what we're aiming for. Learning to take our desire for happiness seriously. Follow it through in a consistent way. And once you get there, then as a John Swett once said, when you reach the ultimate happiness, who cares if there's a self or not a self, or whether you can find someone who's experiencing this or what? It doesn't matter. You've got the ultimate happiness. So even though the Buddha talks a lot about suffering and stress, the unattractiveness of the body, the lack of control you have over things, you know, it's not for a negative or a pessimistic purpose. It's to direct your attention in another way, saying, look, you can't look at these places for true happiness. You've got to look someplace else. This is the theme underlying all of his teachings, that true happiness really does matter. It is important. It's worth giving yourself over to. The desire for true happiness is something that's worth taking seriously because it leads to true happiness. If you follow through with it skillfully. So although sometimes we may resist his teachings because they seem to threaten our ideas about what we need to do and what we need to believe in order to be happy, it's good to step back and question our assumptions. Because there are many, many people who follow the Buddha's way and found that, yes, it does lead to a true happiness, and that the happiness you get following other paths doesn't nearly compare. So when you see fear in your practice, remember there's skillful fear and unskillful fear. Skillful fear is focused on doing things that are going to cause harm and suffering. Unskillful fear comes from holding on to things that you know are going to change. And it's in the light of this understanding that we work with our sense of self and ultimately learn to adopt the teaching on not-self as well. When you learn how to use these teachings skillfully at their appropriate times and appropriate places, then you find they really are conducive to happiness when there's really nothing to criticize in the Buddha's teachings on happiness. They're there to help us find the happiness we want. He's not forcing them on anybody. There's no power play involved here. It's something he offers out of compassion. He's found that these practices work for him. They work for other people as well. It's simply a question of whether we understand them properly and learn how to use them skillfully. That's the issue.